Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Pinckney to Pinckney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. We had a very, very, very interesting week. Nobody will believe what is happening here in Barron County. Those of you who don't know where Barron County is located, it's 179 miles from Detroit, 90 miles from Grand Rapids, 45 miles from South Bend, 75 miles from Chicago. Anybody believe that they still hanging nooses and burning crosses today in Barron County, Michigan? You just can't make this stuff up. It's shameful and ridiculous. It's unfortunate that we have to live through stuff like this. Here in Barron County, there's no such thing as justice. We had a county commissioner who stole almost $1 million from the senior citizens. He wrote, or he forged checks for 7 years from four different accounts. He was a friend of theirs, so they let him off the hook. Never was charged with forgery. Never. And if you go into the store and steal an apple, you got about a 95% chance of going to prison. Who would believe this? We have it all here in Barron County. The sheriff department, molesting women left and right. So far, over 50 women has been molested. Nobody have gone to jail. Nobody. Matter of fact, one of the guys, King Trail, he's the sheriff's cousin. They gave him a new job as a rogue commission here in Barron County. Who would believe it? Who would believe it? They had one guy, well, the same guy, Kenyon Trail. When the women get out of jail, he would get their address and phone number and track them down. Pick them up, take them out, buy sex from them, and still have his uniform on. Amazing. Only in America. We have something even more exciting. I mean, you just can't make this stuff up. If I sit here and was telling you even if I tried to make this stuff up, I couldn't make it up. And how they get away with this. We have a prosecutor here by the name of Mike Sepik. He's known for not sending his friends to jail. And most of the time, he don't charge them. They sweep it underneath the rug. But don't come here and steal an apple, an orange, a piece of meat. You got a good chance of going to prison. We're here for one reason and one reason only, to see that justice is served. We have what we call a doctor here who's running a drug ring. And he had been running the drug ring for years. It just didn't happen. You know, he was charged with only 10 felony counts. 5 counts of diverting the OPN. Counts of health care fraud. The delivery alone is 20 years max for this guy. He could have been charged with over 100 charges. Over 100. We know it's over 100. But Barron County Prosecutor Mike Seppin told WSJM, the radio station, that he agreed not to seek any incarceration time for this young man. Amazing. Dr. Craig Sherwood, who is running a drug ring here in Barron County, Michigan. Matter of fact, he even supplied drugs to some people who worked at the courthouse. Nobody was arrested. Nobody was arrested for getting illegal drugs. And this Dr. Craig Sherwood, he pleaded no contest. Let him plead no contest. Prescriptions for years. They only charged him for between 2014 to 2016. But it started a lot longer than that. But yet still, they still could have got over 100 charges against him. But they elected to only charge him with 10 felonies. He was using his family member's name, his cousins, his wife, everybody he was writing drugs for, writing prescriptions, and using them for other people, and also for himself. They didn't say that he was hooked on drugs, but he was. He is someone that you need to talk about. There's no justice in Barron County. The scales of Lady Justice are in balance, especially against people of color. We must continue to fight against this grave imbalance to ensure a humane, just future for all people, all. Black, white, brown, red, yellow, polka dot, blue, whatever color, don't make a difference. We must stand up. The American criminal justice system is totally absent. There is no such thing as justice here in America. See, one of the things that we know, these devils will go to any length to silence anyone who resists their criminal behavior, their generation mind game, and other racist bull that they do. They have black folks scared and upset, nervous. The only time black people get tough when it comes to each other. Then they'll get tough. But we have to make sure that we're doing the right thing. Nobody in the world has ever gotten anything by appealing to the moral sense of the people who were oppressing them. We must stand together and fight back. This is a moral issue. These are moral issues that we're fighting. And there is no such thing as moral here in this country. They don't have it no more. They lack it. But listen, I'm not going to take up too much more of your time. I want to bring in my good friend, Rosie. She was going to talk about her being a hostage in Iran. I think that is powerful. I think that that's something that you need to know, and I think that's something that she needs to talk about. She needs to share that with us. And I believe that that's where we're going to be. We had a tremendous amount of listeners last week. I mean, I tell you, we hit the jackpot. And I want to thank everybody who was listening last week. I'm pretty sure you're listening this week. And I want you to just keep up the great work. Yeah. And just keep up the great, great work. And let me bring in my good friend, Roz. First of all, let me thank you, Roz, for the birthday card, the birthday gift. And I want you to know that I love you. Me and my wife love you. And, you know, you're a tremendous person. We've been together for a long time. And we stand for what's right. We don't care about a person's color. We don't care about stuff like that. We stand for what is right. If it's not right, we are not going to do it. And it's just that simple. And I know that much about you. I know that you've been through a lot. But let's start off talking about Iran when you was a hostage. I got to hear that story because it's such an amazing story that people need to hear. Go right ahead, Roz.
Thank you, Reverend Pinckney, and I love you and Dorothy, and you're always in my prayers, and I'm sending out prayers and love to everyone. And you're right, we have to do God's right way. We have to lead in God's love, or we are just as bad as the devil is, and we will never get anything. I was a military wife, I don't know if you know this, for 21 years, a fighter pilot's wife. I was a mother of an Air Force pilot. We were stationed in Iran, Tehran, in 1978, the year before they took the embassy. We arrived August 30th in Jawhala Square, the Iranian Revolution started. I heard bullets every day. I had death threats on the phone. They talked to me in two parts. They wanted to know how Madame was doing me. And they wanted to, then the second part of their phone call was that they were going to kill me and all Americans. And I heard it every day for months until I told them to go F themselves, which I never swear my father would never let us say a bad word. And they always tell you what they're going to do. They told us they were going to take the embassy. They always repeat what they're going to do. So November 4th of 1979, they took the embassy. But while we were there, the city was burning. People were dying. Buildings were being blown out. Molotov cocktails were being thrown. Post offices were being blown up. We didn't know if we were going to die. We didn't know what was going to happen. And after the city was burning, November 4th of 1978, President Carter decided that the military wives and children could not go out all together because it would look bad. But the world knew that all this was going on. So we had to sign up to leave. And on December 6th, was our time to go out, and we were the first airplane to go out. And we went, and there was no military aircraft to take us out. Now here, I was under constant death threats in Iran. Tehran, they told me they were going to kill me and all Americans for months. And when somebody tells you they're going to kill you, they mean they're going to kill you. And every time the city was burning, my husband was gone, and I was left with my two children, thinking my children were going to die. I'm a mother. It was awful. It was a dirty and filthy country, and they had an open sewer on one side of the street where people went to the bathroom, they washed their clothes, they washed their dishes. This
Isn't
is
that
what
true?
Yeah, this is true. I screamed out my car window, could somebody use a bathroom already? The smell was like I was in a dirty, filthy toilet. Mm. This is not America. Those countries are not like America. Filthy. And when it would rain, these stores with the food, these little stores with the food, this dirty water would get all over the meat that would hang in their windows. It was just awful. If our government had not built like a big market, which is called the commissary, we would have probably all died because there was no food.
Mm.
So we put up with this. My children were supposed to go to school. I, being an officer's wife, a military wife, I was to play bridge and shop. This was what my job was supposed to be there, to make everything look like nothing was happening. Every day I thank God that I'm still alive from this time. We have lived all over the world as a military family. And I didn't want to be there. I don't know why I was there, but the family was together. I have no idea what my husband was really doing, who is now my ex-husband, at all. But it was awful. I was in a war zone. The bullets I could hear every night, and the constant death threats. And I thought any moment this was it. And when my husband left once, and this couple came, and they were there from Sri Lanka. They had worked there, whatever, and they wanted to stay with me and my children. And I didn't know them, and I had two little kids, and I didn't know what to do with them. But finally, they got a place to go. What do you do with strangers, and you have two little children? It's awful.
Well, what about those people that came into your room while you were sleeping?
Oh. No, no one came. I just heard the bullets every night. I heard there was bullets. No, there was bullets, and I had either they called me on the telephone or they were on the telephone telling me. First, they wanted to know all the time how I was doing every day, and then they told me they were going to kill me and all Americans. And the post office, there was burning, and the buildings were burning. Everybody saw them on the news. You can still look it up on the internet how the buildings were like half a building. When you see a war zone on the news today, it looked just like that. So finally, we got to go out. We went for the airplane. There was no military airplane. And our government, under Carter, the Democrat, says that there was nothing going on there. People were dying. Bullets were going by the window. Molotov cocktails were being thrown all the time. The city was burning. And they were shooting people. And so I went home. If you're ever evacuating, go with food. Some parents came with nothing, and they didn't know where they were going. And I went to the Gulf District, their military district. I talked to the American generals' wives. I talked to everybody I could think of. And I said to my husband when he came home that unless we have a plane, if something happens to our children, I'll never forgive him. And he got on the chain of command, and by the next day, we had a plane, and we left. But I'm telling you, it has to be you, and it has to be your mouth. And in the end, an evacuation started. They flew us into Madrid, Spain, which they were wonderful to us. I got a hug from the maid. It was 11 o'clock at night. I'll never forget how important a hug is. Just knowing we were safe, and the Spanish people took us in, and 40,000 people would come out of it because I opened my mouth. And that's how important it is for everybody to stand together. I thought we were going to die. And after I was gone, my husband had, I guess it was Major Larry Davis over, and they shot him walking home.
And
the terrorists shot him walking home in Tehran, Iran. They asked my husband to come back, and he did. And if you saw the picture, you'll see it on the internet of all the cars. Our car was one of them, the Firebird, the Pontiac Firebird in the square. And he came out with Ross Perot's men. But I cannot tell you how awful it is when you're under the threat of death. And now in this country, the terrorists are all over. We just had a terrorist attack in New York after I said this last Sunday. We have to get together. We have to educate our children. We have to look to the Lord, and we have to help each other no matter what color we are, because they are here. We have Sharia law, their law here, which women are nothing. If you think women are being raped in jail, women are being raped in this culture. Women are nothing. They're lower than camel dung. Nothing. They have honor killings. They are all over. They're in our American cities. We need to educate our children to the right thing, to come back to the Lord, to come back to church. It was awful. All I can say, it was awful. And as a military wife...
How did your children... How's your children taking in Now, were they old enough to know what was going on?
Well, they were, and then I said that if I really got, you know, the children would follow what the parents are doing, and I had to remain calm. So my children would not be left in this. If I would have just been a bananas, they would have been bananas. So I had them cleaning. My husband, they called him away. Every time the city was burning, he was called away. And then my children, I had them vacuuming. I had them cleaning, just with tears in my eyes, not saying anything.
Wow.
I mean, because really, the children follow what you're doing. And when we evacuated, finally a big C5A came. And if you don't think that's exciting, you know, like in a movie, they came and when you come in, that's the cargo place. It's a huge plane. Then we were taken upstairs, and the seats, you fly, you know, the seats are turned backwards. And my son wanted to, they asked him if he wanted to be with the pilot, so he was up there, and we could not get to him. But it is so important, our actions with our children. And because I really did that, in all situations, I try to be calm, really calm. I'm great in an evacuation. I'm great in a crisis. You just remain calm. Even
Absolutely.
With the tears coming down, it's very important to do that. I just felt that.
Wow.
And we
amazing.
Got out of there. My son got really sick while he was there. He had 105 temperature. It was so filthy. He went with his friends to the store, and I don't know what they ate, but he got really sick. And I had to figure out. It was amazing that here is a valley girl in the middle of a revolution that President Carter declared it a war zone. And because he did, we couldn't get paid for the loss of our, we lost everything there. Furniture, clothes, pictures, personal property, everything. So then I knew if anything ever happened, there's a little clause on your insurance policy that you will not be paid. Everybody should check that out. So he did that,
absolutely.
And President Carter knew for a whole year that they were going to take the American embassy on November 4th because they told us. And the terrorists tell us what they're going to do. Just like the terrorists in New York, he told people. People knew all about what he was doing. They like to tell you what they're going to do. So if you think somebody's doing something, you better report it. Because they're here to take over our country, and they found that we are so stupid because they're now in our schools. They got mosques on every corner, and this is where they rile people up, just like in Iran, and get them going. And they thought, and with our laws and our constitution, they are using it to take over this country, and they found that it's so easy to take us over.
Well, it is. It's all planned.
It is. We're so stupid.
Listen,
I can't believe it. What does it mean if they want to kill you?
Right. Listen, I want to give you a few more minutes. I want to talk about what happened to you at the school. I want you to start at the beginning because some of the people, we have some new listeners, and I want them to know about you and not only your adventure in Iran, but I want them to know about your adventure as a school teacher in California. I want you to start at the beginning, how this happened, what happened to you, so people can understand how important it is to stick together and stay together. And there's nothing more important than standing with each other and standing up and fighting for each other. And then after I get through with you, I'm going to bring on my good friend, from Louisiana. I'm gonna let them go. We got to talk about Mr. Victor a little bit too. But I'm just gonna dedicate my show today to you and Mr. Victor today. And those of you who called and said I promised that you was gonna be on and stuff like that. But I think that there are things right now that's a little bit more important, and people need to understand point it is to take a stand for what's right. And that's where we're missing the ball. You know, we're dropping the ball on that level because we have not proven that we can stand for each other. So what I want you to do, I want you to start talking about when you was a school teacher in California and what happened to you. And I want to talk about the doctor because I noticed that, you know, a doctor nowadays have no scruples. They don't, you know, they
right.
can't do anything. You
right.
see? And in your case, you're a perfect example of that. And so this will maybe
I've had it all. I've had it all. I'm a very calm person. You know me. And I love the Lord, and I work for him. And I decided in Iran, no, if I'm going to die, I'm going to speak up till the end. Reverend Pinkney.
All right.
And
absolutely.
So it's so important.
Absolutely.
I was even in the nuclear accident in Russia. I have an incredible life. I decided it wasn't a horrible life. I have turned it. It's an incredible life. You say something enough, it becomes that. Okay, I was a teacher for Los Angeles Unified School District after I came back here. And in December of 2000, I was sprayed in my face with the toxic chemicals from a fire extinguisher. In June of 2000, we had a wonderful friend, this Reverend Pinkney and I, Charles Smith, a black teacher who taught at Gompers Middle School in Los Angeles, a wonderful human being who would later pass away from his injuries. Okay, so I was sprayed in December of 2000. The school refused to call the paramedics. The school refused to call hazmat. I was choking. My face was burning. It burned my skin. My chest hurt. I was gasping for air. My muscles felt like mush. I was coughing. I was so sick, and so were my students. My nose was closing. My tongue was swelling, and so were my students. Los Angeles Unified School District, the principal, Barbara Charnas, refused to do anything. Why? It's free to call the paramedics. Through the years, 2 years later, they also never sent me to the right doctors. I am documented now with fibromyalgia and lung damage from the toxic chemicals in my face. I ingested an excessive amount. Most of the days, I am not well, and it's fighting for my life every day here. 2 years later, that Los Angeles Unified School District gave me an act of violence. That means that I was physically injured from being sprayed. Meanwhile, the union and the teachers keep voting for the union as the union just absolutely, can I say it, screws them over. It's horrible, and they all just vote in line with the union. Then Don Watkins, the director of disability management, has the checks, numbers on the checks. You know, they give you workers' comp money. The check numbers are changed, which is illegal. Then they stop sending me to the right doctors. That's a game they play in workers' comp. Usually they end up sending you to a psychiatrist so they can say it's a mental case, which is easier to lower your medical rating, which people across the country should have found this out by now. They play this game. They want to kill you. Killing you off, they make all this money. They could care less about you. The school district has agreed that I have all the injuries I say, but they had to figure out how they were going to lower my medical rating. My trial started 10 years later, if you can believe it. They delayed denials and death. So my judge, Gerald Cohn, said the worst things about me. He made a medical psychiatric diagnosis. Remember, I was sprayed in my face. I was an art teacher, which is such a hard position to get. I passed my STOL evaluation for teaching. I was advisor to the Bible Club on campus with about 250 students. I was head of the leader of the Fun Bunch, where I would arrange for movies and plays for teachers and their families all over the district. And all of a sudden, I have this judge who said the most awful things about me, a character assassination, and he's giving Dr. John Stahlberg of Santa Monica a medical diagnosis. In January of 2012, in Dr. Stahlberg's deposition, Dr. Stahlberg admits that he did not have the evidence for the diagnosis, but he wrote anyway. And guess how much he should make off of this? $16,770 to write this medical diagnosis that he did, that he admitted that he didn't have the evidence for. My
wow.
God.
How many visits did you have with him?
I saw him four times since 2002. They did three depositions on him. He said I was getting sicker, never mentioned the medical diagnosis. After Don Watkins from Los Angeles Unified School District in 2009 moved out millions of dollars and put it in the general fund, Dr. Stahlberg started writing these bogus medical reports, unsubstantiated medical reports. So with Dr. Stahlberg's $16,770 medical report, the judge lowered my medical rating, so they didn't pay me anymore, and I never saw another doctor because of what he did. And now, in the same deposition, Dr. Stahlberg said I was getting sick and needed help. I mean, it's just bizarre, to say the least. So after all these years, Sedgwick from LAUSD decided I should approved, which is a miracle, but I still haven't seen the doctors, nine different specialists for me to see. I get to see a dentist, which my teeth are falling out, a dentist, a pulmonologist, a rheumatologist, etc. Just going on and on. I don't get my weekly money, nothing. But my case goes on, and I keep speaking up for all those. I get it. Delays, denials, and death. And our governor, Jerry Brown, who has just destroyed the state with his state legislature and taxing everything with all their awful bills, like Kevin DeLeon has helped, and Arnold Schwarzenegger has helped, and they don't care if injured workers die. It's okay with them. And I will say it again and again, and Governor Brown knows I say this. It's okay with Governor Brown and the state legislature and Los Angeles Unified School District to kill off injured teachers and injured workers. And anybody out there that's going through this, you should know this. It's not you. They are so corrupt and so disgusting. And we must stand together and speak up. And also, Dr. Stahlberg, I understand his reports now are kind of incoherent. And somebody stole his computer with my records and other people's records, and nothing has been done. And when I complained about the state of California, did nothing. And if people saw me, aren't I just a little quiet person, Reverend Pinkney?
Well, listen.
So we have
you know
to
what,
surprise that... people and stand together. That's the problem. All the lawyers and workers come and say, don't say anything, don't say anything. All these people should be speaking up. Because when you don't speak up, they just throw the trash on your head.
Absolutely. But listen, Ron, I got to let you go.
Okay, please pray for me. You know, I had surgery, so I I need prayer.
Well, we're going to pray for you and stay focused and keep the fight up. And we love you and just stay focused. Let's do what needs to be done. But listen, I got to bring in my good friend from Louisiana. And I will be talking to you very, very soon, Roz. Maurice Williams, are you there?
Hello.
How you doing,
Reverend Pinkland?
I didn't
expect to be on today. I loved it just to listen to you today. You know, I like to be informative and see what's happening.
Absolutely.
But I'm always willing to talk.
Yeah, we've been in a tough struggle, you know. And, you know, I really want to talk about stuff that people need to know. And the listeners, you know, we're increasing at a rate that is almost unheard of right now. And I appreciate all the listeners. And I want to talk about Mr. Victor. Can you talk about Mr. Victor today?
Well, the main thing about Mr. Victor is what Mr. Victor movement is. We're trying to get people to go on the petition and sign Amendment 28 and also download the song Favor, because revenue is needed for anything to be brought forth. Revenue. Without revenue, we ain't going to do nothing but continue talking.
Yeah. Well,
99 cents to download that.
Yeah, but you know, one thing, when it comes to stuff like this, I know I was in prison. I know what it takes, you know. You got to give them the information in order for them to do it. Everybody don't know Mr. Victor and why he's in jail and why he's in prison and how he got there and stuff like that. There's a lot of people don't know the situation. So if we just tell you to tell somebody to download his music, you know, most people is not going to do it. You have to tell the story. And I learned that by being in prison myself. I was able to tell the story, and that's how I got support from all over the world, because every time I opened my mouth, I was telling them exactly what happened. I told them about how there's no such charge and stuff like that. Everything that came out of my mouth, the first thing came out of my mouth, there's no such charge as voter a forgery on a recall petition. And this is what was stuck in people's heads. If you keep talking about, well, go download this and download it, they're not going to do that. They want to know why they should be downloading. And I think that's where y'all making y'all mistake at. You got to tell the story. If you don't tell the story, people are not going to listen and fall in place and take care and do what you need done. Always tell the story of how he got there. Why he's there.
This is the essential of that.
Wrong.
See, he's a political prisoner, but just like she spoke about the laws on and the capacity that she's speaking on our teachers and how it is corrupt, that's the same thing with the judicial system. It's nothing new. So the stories are the same regardless if the facts are different. A black man that's trying to do anything is going to be destroyed. Power got him locked up. Him doing...
Yeah.
Listen, him doing things to build the community, all the business actions that he was involved in, the white folks didn't like it. So what did they do? They destroyed him. They imprisoned him. They knocked off the head and watched everything fall. They was trying to get what he was creating, but they can't take that idea. Yet he's in prison. But this is the thing. We keep talking about the story. But what we need to be doing is find a solution. And the solution ain't only for Mr. Victor. That's the key. The solution is for any convicted offender that has nothing to protect them. Amendment 28 is the revenue to push that and to do other things in order for us to go on the offense and stop being on the defense. We need miracle workers, so we need people that's going to actually do things. We can talk about it all we want, and it's consistently being talked about. What we need is people that's going to do it. We got a petition that we've been having out since June. I went on it yesterday, and you still don't have nothing but the same people signing. People talk like they are about it. People talk like they're down. They hear you, but they won't take them 2 minutes out to download the song or that 1 minute it takes to sign the petition. So we steady talking about it. We steady talking. He don't even talk about his case. He talks about the solution for everyone, for all of our people in general, because he understands it's systematic. It's not just one person that is a political prisoner or just had an unfair trial. And justice is prevalent. It's everywhere. And it's inherent in the Constitution. It's inherent in every law that is being passed by the legislation, every creation. The white folks are steady getting at the round table devising plans for economics and to keep us disenfranchised. We're the only ones that steady talking about it and not coming to the round table, those with voices coming together and not just talking about doing it. That's the key, doing it. A political prison, creating jobs by opening a grocery store, creating homes and jobs by the same people that to buy land, buy houses on land, to work. He has the solution for everything that we talk about. Transportation, housing, food, and medical, so important. And he was endeavoring in all that. And they weren't a part of it. So what do you do when you mess with their money? See, he was in a mind state that I'm doing for my people and I'm making this, but he didn't understand it. The white folks was in a position that he's taking from us. So he didn't have the defense. He didn't have the team. He didn't have the people behind him to protect him when he failed. So when he failed, all those that wanted to be a part of his success, everybody turned away from him. All they wanted was the plan. So now he's in prison. He's not in prison just because of the system. He's in prison because the people that said they loved him, that said they had his back, didn't defend him, didn't come to his aid. They talked about it. That's all they did. So when we talk about Amendment 28, there you go. We still talk about it. All the people we talk about it don't go sign it. We talk about why he's in prison. We talk about why the Louisiana justice system is out of order. But they're not doing it. 99 cents for a song to go from defense to offense to get things, revenue, to build things, to not just for self. See, that's the beautiful thing about Mr. Victor. That's his godly nature. He's never thinking about himself. He's here suffering, but he still smiles. He's here suffering, but he still creates. His mind still works. His heart is still strong. And his Job deal, he still does not turn against God, and that is his walk. I've never seen a man in my life walk in the faith of God like he does. He doesn't talk about it. I watch him walk it. I see many people talk about what they vow, that they're this God-fearing individual, and they don't really know what fear is. They don't walk it. I see it. So it turned me in, sent me into a spiritual warfare. He's the first person in my life, and I'm from the ghetto. I'm from the slums of America, and I watch him. He's the first man that I can sit back and say, man, because of him, I want to know God. I want to be perfect. Not like America says you can't be perfect, but like it is where you go, well, I can be successful without having to steal, kill, rob, or cheat. Well, I can be a man and be empowered. Well, I can be a husband, a father to my children, period. And the system is what it does to take that head from the household, to take the husbands, to take the fathers. And now what do we have? We have mass genocide on our own people. They be screaming that it's black-on-black crime. We killing each other. But if you ain't got jobs, if you got the hardship that goes on in the slums of the ghetto of Black America, you're going to have your own people killing each other. Drugs will you use to get your finances up to get up, because that's all you got, because they miseducated you, because they made you believe you can be nothing, because they make our women believe they don't need a man. We have none. Men are not even men anymore. Men are all right doing what we did on a plantation, making babies, 4, 5, 6 baby mothers. We don't even care. Women don't even care about just being baby mothers. They don't care about not being wise. They don't care about the labels that are thrust upon us. Look how we walk around. Nigga to us is all right. Let the wrong person say it, we gonna flex up. But that's all right. So, like I say, is we keep talking about it, we gonna do nothing. Mr. Victor has the solution. We need everybody to get with the solution. And the solution is being part of a team that are not procrastinators. In order to be a part of the team, every individual that want to be a part of something, that want change, want that move to go on, they got to stop procrastinating. So I'm going to keep saying, sign Amendment 28, download the song. This is the solution. That's the beginning. More things to come behind it, but you got to start somewhere to get revenue to make anything established, to accomplish anything, to make any forward motion. A broke person ain't going nowhere. A broke team ain't doing nothing. You're going to be right there with no solution because you can't move forward. And if the people, every Black person that has ears, that's listening, that can hear, that can see, they're supposed to be a part of that. They're supposed to go on that website and look at that and read that and digest what it's saying and understand it. Although it's Mr. Victor's vision, although he's a political prisoner in Louisiana, Mr. Victor has a solution for the mass. He let that Black Wall Street state of mind, if black people really understand what Black Wall Street was and what it manifested into in the Atlanta area. We don't even know our history. We are lost by that. Nothing is new what happened to Mr. Victor. Nothing. They took his life. They took his children. They've done that to many prisoners here in Louisiana. It's no different. So his story is a story for all. His story is not an individual story. It's inherent in the laws that govern us. Those laws were not made for black individuals. Those laws was to find a way to keep the economic system going because slavery was abolished. And it wasn't abolished because they felt like it was inhumane. It was abolished because the South was making more money than the North. So the Civil War was created because the South didn't want to hear that they had to free the slaves in order for... Look at the labor unions. The labor unions was created because of that. Because the South was making money. They needed something to protect them in order to do that. So when you have money in the picture, that's the only thing the white folks know. That's the only thing that made them fight against each other. Period. Nothing else. Period. Sign that petition, Amendment 28. Download the song Favor, which is 99 cents. None of that takes more than 3 minutes. That's not hard to help a political prisoner and all the political prisoners in America.
All right. You heard it. Repeat that. What you download. Tell them where they need to go.
Favor.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So those of you who are out there, please do what you can to help Mr. Victor and make this thing happen. Because I was a political prisoner, and I had a plan when I got in there. And that was to execute my plan. The plan was basically was to give people the information they needed in order to understand why I was inside the prison of in the state of Michigan. They knew that I have done nothing wrong. Fortunately, they wanted to make sure because they would not have sent a SWAT team to my house for a recall petition. Whoever heard of forgery on a recall petition is unheard of. It just don't happen. But here in the state of Michigan, they can do whatever they want, just like in Louisiana. They can do whatever they want. They don't care about you. They don't care about me. They don't care about nobody. They are going to do what they do. If that means crushing you, crushing me, crushing everybody else, that is what they're going to do. You see, you have to understand the struggle that has taken place in recent years in Benjamin Harbor is a case in point, one that holds a number of lessons for the American people. See, the fight in Benjamin Harbor is a war. It's not a conflict. This is a real war. This is a war over whether America will have prosperity and democracy or live in poverty under the heels of open corporate rule. And this is what they believe. They believe that this is why they make the laws to fit what they need to done. And they do this purposely to put us in prison. And we fall for it. These devils will go to any length to silence anyone who resists their criminal behavior, no matter what it is. They will go to any length. They will say anything. They will do anything to silence you. It's unfortunate, but that's just the way it is. We have to change the way we do business. We have to change the way we act. We must learn to live together as brothers and sisters or we are going to perish together as fools. It doesn't make a difference whether you're black, white. It doesn't make a difference whether you're brown, yellow, red, polka dot, blue. We have to learn to live together as brothers and sisters. The state of democracy is detestable right now. We are not about to sit back and let it continue. Of course, are not above the rights of everyday human beings like you and I. Whirlpool Corporation is responsible for the death of 79 people in London. They must be held accountable. Nobody goes to jail. 79 people killed in London. And not one single person is going to jail. This is just the way things are. That's because the people are too intimidated to stand up and fight for what is right. We have to change the way we're doing business. We have to come together. You have to remember it's more of us than them. See, that's the thing. It's more of us than them. Until we understand that, it's going to continue this way. Are we going to continue to allow Mr. Victor to stay inside the prison? You're talking about life without the possibility of parole. That's what he's in prison. Him and his wife. How could this be? Why is there not a group down there in Louisiana standing up for Mr. Victor? Why is not the NAACP, which is a joke? They're the biggest joke we got going. Their job is to neutralize us. But why are the people not standing up for Mr. Victor? You see, oh, it takes work to stand up. I know what I did when I was inside. I made sure that I had people doing the things that need to be done. And it worked. Every chance I got, I told the people about why I was in prison. I didn't hesitate. I told them the whole story. And what they did with that information was on them. It was no longer on me. Whether they want to help or not, that's on you again. Sometimes people don't help unless it affects them directly, especially African-Americans. They do not go out of their way to help other people. And that's why we're in this position today. We need to stand up and fight because it's me today and you tomorrow. These people, they know exactly what they're doing. And Mr. Victor, I have the opportunity to talk to him several times. He is a good guy. He deserves better. But he's not going to get better unless we stand up for him. It's going to take each and every one of us, go sign him, you know, if that's the case. Go listen to his music, if that's the case. But more important than listen to his music or anything else is for you to stand with him. You see, if you stand with him, we could find a way to get him out. And we know how difficult it is in Louisiana. It is no picnic in the park. So we must change. We must start fighting differently. And you know, I hate to say this, and people, please listen to me, because I'm really a nonviolent person. But we got issues. I don't know how this thing is going to play out. I never seen so much hatred. I never seen so much of it, you know. And I went to school in the South. I have not seen this much hatred that we're seeing today. They're willing to lock you up and throw away the key. They're willing to tell you that you're never, ever, ever going to see the outside of a prison wall, whether you like it or not, and it's okay. We should be standing up fighting today, you know. And what I want to do, we're gonna stand up for Mr. Victor. We're going to make sure that we do the things that need to be done. But we got to make sure that everybody is on the same page, which is crucial. One of the things that I developed was the skill of organizing people to do the right thing. But you got to have all the materials. You cannot organize without the materials that you need to fight. This is a war. This is no conflict. We talk about a man's life and his wife. They both got life without the possibility of parole, which makes no sense to me, but the way it is. We must learn to change the way we do business. You know, they always say we run fast, but we don't run long. They say we can't complete the mission. They say we're not busting a grape, but we're the busiest people there is in the whole wide world. We have to change the way we do business. And I tell you, I'm with Mr. Victor, Reverend Victor. I'm with him 100%. And I'm hoping each and every one of you is with him also. We need your support. We need people to take a stand. Can we take a stand for Mr. Victor today? Can we continue this fight today? Can we make sure that we help Mr. Victor do the best we can, maybe to get him out? I tell you, there are some things that we need to do, and we need to do it right away. Let's make this struggle a victory for all. Let's confront this prison system that is destroying this country, control of this country away from the corporations, and build a society where people, not the corporation, make the decision. Let's do this. Can we do this? Is this something that we can do? We can no longer continue to allow things to be like they are, business as usual. We can't do it no more. It's either you're with us or you're against us. There is no in-between. But we must learn to take a stand. We know there's no justice inside the courtrooms today. So what do you do? What do you do? What do you do? I'm asking you, what do you do? What do you do? That's the question. And you have to answer that yourself, because we have allowed them to destroy families, people, communities, and say nothing until something happened to us. Then we want to fight. It's too late. You got to stand up and fight for others. So Mr. Victor is a perfect person for you to stand up and fight for. Let's stand up and fight for Mr. Victor. Then we can for Mr. Victor. Let's show him that we can win this battle. Because we're talking about life in prison without the possibility of parole. Can we do it? Can we stand up for Mr. Victor? Will we stand up for Mr. Victor? Let's stand up for Mr. Victor. I want to thank everybody for listening today. I really want to talk about Mr. Victor today. I want to talk all about him and my friend Ross talking about the Iran, what happened there, because people need to know these things, you see, and you need to stay focused. Stay on top of what you're doing. It's me today and you tomorrow. Tuesday, the Supreme Court will be doing oral arguments on my case in Lansing, Michigan. I expect good things to come out of this, but you know what you're dealing with, a corrupt system. So let's continue to pray for each other, stand tall with each other, and do what we need for each other. And everybody have a wonderful, wonderful day. See you next week. Same time, same station. You are listening to the Pinckney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. Thank you for listening.